100% chance I will be there.
Please, it's just one little football game.
Little? We're talking Cowboys Eagles here. It's the biggest game of the year. It's the only thing I care about in the entire world.
More than your child?
Yes. You put me in a position where I had to say it, and now that I did, I feel free.
If I hear you say no again, I'm hulking out. We're talking screaming and swearing. I'm gonna smash this decorative box.
Do not hulk out. Do not smash that decorative box.
Say goodbye to the decorative box.
Your mom keeps her knickknacks in there.
I'll destroy her knickknacks too. Hulk doesn't respect knickknacks.
Fine, I'll do your stupid thing. Where are we going again?
Do you even listen when I talk?
I get the gist of it. Say no a lot. I make it work.
One woman was asked, if you had it to do over again, would you have kids? She thought about it. She said, yes, but not the same ones. There are no perfect parents. Your parents weren't, and you aren't. There are no perfect kids. You weren't, and your kid isn't. Therefore, there's no perfect families. Not yours, not mine. We're all part of an awkward family photo. The whole metaphor of the family was something that Jesus used a lot to explain the kingdom and the goal of the kingdom. We are created because God wanted to love us. He wanted a family. And that's what the church is to be all about. He told us the desired outcome of this relationship that we could have with him and the Father. It's in John 15 on your outline. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you slaves because a master doesn't confide in his slaves. Now you are my friends since I have told you everything the Father told me. Jesus says that there's a friendship aspect that he has with the Father that he's inviting us into. His disciples and he had grown to a place of what he invited them into there as friendship. But it doesn't start there. And within our families, the goal, the end game of this parental relationship is friendship. But you can't jump straight to friendship with your kids. There's a process. Psalms 127:3, children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him. Some translations say that children are a blessing from the Lord, a heritage, a reward. And you know, you might really question that. How much of a blessing were they this morning? You know, it's the stresses can get to us. And then if you ever look at how much it costs to raise a child from birth to 18, it's a lot of cash. And you can start thinking, man, think of all the things I could have bought with that money, or time. Just, you know, all the freedoms that I had. Think about when you were first together as a couple and you wanted to go somewhere. You know what you did? You walked out of the house. That's it. What does it take now to walk out of the house? Get down here. We're going to leave without you. You don't have those shoes. Where are your shoes? Oh yeah, it just goes on and on and on. There's a whole lot to this whole thing, and it costs you something. It costs you time. It costs you stuff. But there is a blessing, and there is a reward, and it's worth it when we walk through this properly, when we deal with it in the way that God would show us how to do this. And one constant in our lives, if you're a parent, is your kids. There's going to be friends that come and go in your life. Think of how many people that signed your yearbook pledging everlasting friendship. How many of them are you close to now? Probably not a lot. The desire should be that we could be lifelong friends with our kids. And what goes around comes around. I wiped their butt. And one day, they will wipe mine. Now, this talk today is something that we have taught over the years in various ways. We have found it to be so helpful in bringing some context and really some help in this parenting process. There's a couple of variables in parenting. First of all, you have the authority variable that ramps up and down, and then there's the friendship factor that hopefully ramps up. Here's a little graph that'll sort of show you what we're going to talk about today. You've got these four stages of parenting, and that timeline, that's called a lifetime timeline there. So at the beginning, the authority and friendship very low, and then authority ramps up and down, and friendship hopefully ramps up over that time frame. That is the goal. That's really what this is about. And it's vital to move through those phases in order to have a healthy family and have healthy relationships. Now, I want to talk about those four parenting roles. Before I begin, I want to take a moment and welcome all of our churches, all of you up in Venice, those of you in Mission Valley, Imperial Beach, Tijuana, Salt Lake City, and those of you joining us online right now, glad that you're here. I also want to say that if you're not a follower of Jesus, these stages still remain, and you're going to be able to gain something from that. If you are a follower of Jesus, I want to encourage you that you have the Holy Spirit of God to help you in the middle of this thing called life as we navigate these stages. They're not the easiest thing in the world. And if you're not yet a parent, then, God bless you. You know, you can be grateful for that, but maybe you will be one day. And so I want to encourage you to really take note of this, because one day you'll wish you had. I trust me. Well, if you're taking notes, here's the first one, nurse. That's the first stage, the care, nurture, protection. And by the way, this is gender neutral. These are male and female nurses here, okay? It's moms and dads. And in the beginning, this phase, the authority is very low. The friendship is low. You're not really exerting authority. You're not giving instructions and the baby's obeying. That's not how it works. And you're not hanging out as friends. It's not like you're having a conversation and the baby goes, oh, that's great. By the way, thanks for changing that diaper. It's really starting to rash, you know. You're not having that kind of a friendship. It's you're a nurse. You're meeting needs. And you're doing it without the expectation that the baby's going to turn to you and say, thank you. You're awesome. Now, I know some of you are going, oh, no, but there's all this exchange. Whatever. Okay, just relax. Baby needs to be fed, you fed it. Baby needs to be burped, you burp it. Baby poops, call grandma. You know, that's the way this thing works. Luke 2. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born. She gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths, placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. This is Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus. Even Jesus was having his needs met in this stage. Now, this nursing stage can be overwhelming. When you're in this phase with kids, you're not sleeping. They can't tell you what's wrong. It's stressful. It can put a lot of tension on your other relationships. It's tough. There are some of you that you only come to church because someone else is taking care of the kid. God bless you. It's all right. Glad you're here. And for some of you, you're past that stage, but you have friends that are in that stage. Help them out. Take the baby. Give them a break. And you may be in a place where you're going, oh, I'd like to have another baby. Babysit. It's great birth control. And what can be annoying is when you're getting babied when you're 16. You got to move out of that stage as a parent. 16-year-olds don't want to be babied. They want freedom. A little brave heart for you there. And all these phases, they're not a hard and fast age breakdown. It's not like at this age you move to this one, at this one. That's a dotted line because it gets blurry. It's an art form, this thing called parenting. And then each kid is different. They don't progress through the stages at the same way the last one did. That nursing stage starts at zero and ends, I don't know exactly. I'm talking about the being the nursing stage, not the nursing. That's not what we're talking about. Some of those go on way too long, too. If he's calling for it by name while he's setting down his car keys, you went too long, okay? That nursing stage, though, it needs to begin to end. You need to start transitioning when your kid uses a word that has two letters. No! Then it's time to begin to move to that next stage, which is the king-queen, where you're exerting leadership and direction, guidance. A dad needs to be king. A mom needs to be queen. And the king and queen articulate the reality of the kingdom at that address. That's their job. Anytime you're a king, you're a queen, the kid says, no, you got an issue. There's a problem here. It needs to be dealt with. In this phase, the king knows that he knows more than the kids. The truth is, you're smarter than they are. You know how the world works, even though they don't think you do. Even though they think they know everything. And you don't know what they really need and what they really should have and how it really should go. You do. But, you know, we've all seen it. Our kids just, yeah, they got it. We went up to Big Bear a few years ago with my daughter and her family, and my then 4-year-old grandson, Dylan, excellent snowboarder at 4, could really not much he couldn't do on a snowboard, and because he had seen both Dora and Diego do it, and that made him an expert. And so he'd actually never snowboarded, but he was an expert until we got there and he actually tried it. And after a couple of good falls, he's riding a chairlift with his dad, and he's watching snowboarders over here and skiers over here, and he looked and goes, Dad, I think maybe I'm a skier. That's it. They don't know what they don't know. And the king and queen are there to help them understand reality. That's part of the job. I'm not saying you squash every fantasy, but the stuff that's important you need to bring reality to. The problem is that some homes are just too kid-centered. Once that kid wakes up, they are in charge. They are running the show, and everything revolves around the kid's happiness. You know, sometimes in order to be the king and the queen, you just need to exert that authority. Just remind them who's the king and who's the queen. They need to know it. Dad, if you're, you know, doing some project and you're going to take a break and you want to come in and watch TV, but there's some 6-year-old little girl sitting there and she's got 15 episodes of Cupcake Wars she's working through. And you're saying, my turn. No, no, I've only got 10 more to go. Come on. And you, no, I've prayed about it. And the Holy Spirit wants me to watch Sons of Anarchy. You know, do have her leave if that's what you're going to do. Parents, though, you know, they don't seem to want to be king and queen. This is the stage that I see so lacking in our society today. We want our kids to express themselves, even if it's rebelliously. I've actually heard parents say, you should never tell your child no. That is so stupid. And, you know, I know that there's going to be somebody that go, no, and you're going to email me and tell me why. Don't bother. I don't care, okay? Don't abdicate your throne, king or queen. Don't do it. Now, I didn't say be an abusive king or an ogre queen. That's not it at all. You can be a great and loving king, a great and loving queen. Look at Proverbs 29. We can see how parenting, being a great king or queen, can work together. If a king judges the poor fairly, his throne will last forever. To discipline a child produces wisdom, but a mother is disgraced by an undisciplined child. So mothers and fathers, you have a lot in common with great kings when you exert proper discipline. Now, and I'm defining discipline as exercising authority appropriately. I'm not saying you have any license at all to be abusive or to do so reacting out of anger. That's not at all what we're talking about here. Gary Smalley wrote many books. One of them is titled The Key to Your Child's Heart. He said this, children need a sense of discipline and authority in their lives to help them develop emotionally and physically. It gives children a sense of security to know what their boundaries are. The problem is it's hard to do. It's hard work. And here's what I have to say. Parents, it's not about you. It's not about you. It's actually expressing love. So if you don't want to discipline your kids, you don't want to go through, you don't want to set those boundaries and reinforce them, then you're not being loving. Ephesians 6. Children, obey your parents because you belong to the Lord, for this is the right thing to do. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. If you honor your father and mother, things will go well for you and you will live a long life on the earth, which means they're not going to kill you. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. Now, I want to switch this for a second. Students. Students, you have responsibility in this. As you're growing, you're thinking, man, I want my parents to move through these phases. They're dragging here. Communicate. Don't just go, talk. Let them know. That's how they'll know you're moving forward. This just says you're still a baby. So children, obey your parents. Why? Because it's going to go better for you. It's just flat out smarter. It's a good thing for you to do. They understand how the world works, even if you don't think they do. They know more than you think they know. They had sex and you're the result. I know, some of you kids, you just threw up a little bit in your throat, okay. So how do you go about doing this? Well, when one of the things we did when our kids were young in grade school, we did a contract every year at the beginning of school. These are the expectations. You know, you come home, you can get a snack, and then it's homework before you go play. And, you know, all of these things. Here's bedtime. There was just a number of things. We kind of picked about five or six things that were crucial. And we wrote, here's what we expect. And then, you know, here's time frames. And then here's the consequence if you break the when you break the contract. And all those were agreed to, and then they signed it. Now, the first year, they'll just sign it. They're stupid. They don't know any better. After that, they start negotiating. So make sure you take advantage of the first year. It's just kind of nice. But anyway, we taught them this. You know, you come home, you have a snack, that's cool. Now do your homework, then you can go play. We told them it's delayed gratification. You'll actually enjoy the playing more if the homework is off your mind. Of course, our son Ryan would say, no, I'll enjoy playing if I never do the homework. It'll be fine. We had to bring him into reality. In the same book, Gary Smalley kind of lays out this contract idea. He said this, and these are not on your outline, but I think they'd be helpful. Set clearly defined limits by writing a contract. Now, I'm saying it again because some of you have already dismissed it. You're not going to bother. I'm telling you, it's a good thing. Figure out a contract. It's great. Matter of fact, there's even examples in this book of the contract. It's good stuff. I'm telling you. And then supervise the living of these limits regularly. Inspect what you expect. Hold them to it. And then consistently handle resistance through lost privileges. This is the key. It's part of the contract. When you blow the contract, these are the consequences. You're going to lose certain privileges that are appropriate. Because if you don't make those decisions early on when there's not a bunch of emotion, you're going to make them in the middle of emotion. Either you're going to not have a consequence that really means anything or is even related to it, or you're going to so overstate it and you're going to make these huge threats that you know you'll never do, and so do they. And so it's pointless and it's meaningless and it doesn't get you anywhere, you know? If they've got a bike and the rule is you put the bike in the garage at the end of the day, you don't leave it in the driveway or in the yard. Well, if they don't put bikey away, no bikey the next day. You know, an appropriate response. Another way to look at it is you are a PR director. And I don't mean public relations. What I mean is that there's privileges, but they also have corresponding responsibilities. Privileges have corresponding responsibilities. And guess what happens? When we have privileges that are lacking responsibilities, you know what they end up thinking they have? Entitlements. And you know what your child will become if you give them all these entitlements? Congressman. None of us want that. Okay. Some of you are struggling with this whole idea of being the king or the queen, because your parents never left that stage. And as an adult, and even in your family, they're trying to exert authority as the king or the queen. And so you've decided, I'm never going to do that. Or maybe it's just a difficult thing for you. It's uncomfortable. You don't know quite how to go about it. And so you're trying to just jump straight to the friendship. And man, it does not work. It does not work because you're not doing what you need to do to train them. And that's that king, queen, and coach before you get to friend. So vitally important. If there's no foundation for that friendship that you've built, when it gets to the place where they're old enough for it, they don't respect you. Now, parenthetical break. If you're the step king or the step queen, extra tough job. It is just an extra tough job because there's these ex-kings and ex-queens out there that maybe have different rules at their kingdom, and it can be frustrating. But I want to encourage you to engage the ex and try to work together on this. Some of you are going, if we could do that, we'd still be together. Well, still try. Write this verse down. It's Romans 12, 18. It says this, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. It doesn't say you're going to live at peace with everyone. It does say as far as it depends on you. It means you've got to try. You've got to try to live at peace with everyone. Yes, even the ex-king or the ex-queen. Because if you can be a united front, powerful. Powerful in the life of your kids. But king and queen at your address, you need to be a united front. It's so important that you two communicate. And by the way, do not debate the legislation in front of the subjects. Do not do it. If the king says this and the queen says, oh, I don't think that's the way it should go, and the subjects are right there, ho, ho, ho. You are sowing the seeds of rebellion in the kingdom. You know, you cannot do that. Don't debate the rules of the kingdom in front of the subjects. Why? Because they are sinners. And their goal is to divide and conquer your kingdom. Dr. Beth Grossens, in her book Beyond Time Out, said this, regardless of his level of maturity, intelligence, or judgment, in order to function optimally, be secure, and develop a healthy capacity for emotional regulation, a child must grow up in a family structure where parents are in the lead. This is ultimately why parents need to prevail in the majority of daily struggles. The constant drip of parental accommodation, which in the short term can look insignificant, can in the long run seriously compromise the context of relational leadership that is so central to a child's well-being. It's not about essential to your adult well-being, the king or queen's well-being, because it's not about you. It's about loving your kids enough to embrace this stage. Another verse you can jot down, Proverbs 19, 18. Discipline your children while you still have the chance. Indulging them destroys them. That's just the truth. But at some point, you've got to start this incredibly difficult process of letting go and giving your kids some freedom. And that's the coaching stage, where you're training and you're encouraging them. I really enjoyed this phase a great deal. I didn't really dig the baby phase so much. Don't get me wrong, I loved my kids when they were babies, but it was just, you know, people come now every now and then and say, oh, look at this, oh, the babies are so cute. Nah, they pretty much all look like Yoda, okay? They're not that cute. They're, you know, somebody will come up to me and I'll see their baby and it's like, oh, you know, it's great, it's cute, great baby, it's awesome, congratulations. You want to hold a baby? Not really. Not really, don't really want to hold the baby. It's like, oh, here, hold the baby. So, holding the baby. And then they're, oh, it's so cute. He peed on you a little bit. It's not cute, it's piss, okay? Let's just be real. There's a lot of blurring of the lines here between this king and queen and coaching phase. It's an art form. And you make attempts, you begin to move toward it, but then you got to back up a little. And so you're trying to figure this thing out as you're going along. But there will always be certain laws of the kingdom at my address. You have to figure out what yours are. Regardless of what stage you're in, here's the thing. If you live under my roof, you go to church. I've had parents come up to me and say, oh, pastor, what do? I just can't seem to get my 14-year-old son to come to church. You know, he just doesn't want to. Who cares? Want to? When does that have anything to do with it? Do they want to eat? You know, there's just certain laws of the kingdom. For example, if you live under my roof, you go to school. If you've graduated from high school and you don't want to go to college yet, you work. And I've talked to so many parents that are in this phase. Their kids are not going to college right now. and you know they're maybe not working, or if they do have a job, what are they doing? Oh, they're blowing their money on all kinds of things. They've got more discretionary income than you do. Why? Because you're paying for it. Yeah. Well, when should they be able to make these kinds of decisions in their life? When they're paying fair market value rent and board at my house. There are students right now that are going, do not listen to him, Mom. He's the devil. This man is a bad man. I love you, Mommy. Whatever. I was watching an interview the other day, and the author of this book, I don't know if this guy is a devil worshiper or not, but the title of his book is awesome. It's called this, Your Kids Are Your Own Fault. It's a guide for raising responsible, productive adults. And one of his points was, we're not trying to raise kids, we're trying to raise adults who are productive and respectful and contributing to a greater society. That's what a coach does. A coach is on the sidelines, cheering the kids on, not necessarily on the field. Students, part of that talking thing. You want your parents to move through these stages? Then ask for their advice. Tell them the situation. Say, what would you do in this situation? Even if it's hypothetical. Begin to engage the coaches in your house. That's part of your responsibility. Because it's hard for the coach. That idea of kind of letting go and you know, giving advice while you take the wheel. Literally, that's what I did this month. Or last month, I was up in Seattle. My granddaughter, Riley, has her permit. And so we were going to go off camping, all of us, and she was going to drive Interstate 90, and she's at the wheel. And so I'm sitting there, and there's like semis and traffic, and I'm going, great job, Riley. And there's, you know, these, it's all going on, and she's, you know, it's a Suburban, an older Suburban. So you can move the wheel like this, it doesn't do anything to the front wheels. And so it's like, way to go, Riley. You know, Riley, if you're watching, I'm just kidding, honey. It's stressful to coach. It is. It's a hard job. So how do you learn to do it? Well, this means when your kid has a science project or an art project, who does the project? This is not hard. They do. Keep your perfectionistic fingers out of it. Oh no, but it's got to be awesome. Just because your volcano failed in fourth grade, this is not your shot. Okay? Let it go. Oh, but they might not get an A. Well, it's really, I think, that your self-esteem is on the line here, not theirs. And every teacher here said, amen. Yes, right. You know what I'm talking about. Coaching includes helping them with impulse control. Self-control. That's an important part of the process of what you're teaching your kids in this stage. One of my favorite stories to tell, again, is on my son. Most of this is about my son. Pretty much all of it. If you've ever had a strong-willed child in your home, that's my son. At any rate, he was about 12 years old, and we were having a discussion that was getting very heated because he wanted to do something, and I said no, could not do it. And he wanted to argue the point, and he wanted to negotiate, and he was going, and finally I was like, you know, no, and I started to go through it. Now, here's the why. I want you to understand. I'm just tired of this conversation. I'm not going to listen anymore. And he goes up to his room. That didn't really work for me. So I went up to the room, opened the door, and said, come on, pal, we're not done. We're going to finish this discussion. I was totally even keeled. And I start walking down the hall, and I can hear him starting to follow me, and then he gets to the door, and he says, I would just like some privacy. That didn't really work for me either. So I went down and got a hammer and a screwdriver, and I popped the hinges off, and I took the door to the garage. I said, that's my door. By the way, this is my room. That bed, you're borrowing it. Okay? All of this crap is mine. All right? And so you need to understand that. And so the door just stayed down there for a while. You know, it was privacy. You see, He thought he was entitled to it. I said, no, the way you're acting, you don't get to have privacy right now. Some of you are just really not liking me right now. I get that. You see, it's no walking out on difficult situations or conversations. Impulse control. Because there was going to be a time coming up, I knew it, when there was going to be that professor he didn't get along with, or that boss, and he or she was difficult to deal with. You can't just blow up and walk out. He needed to learn these things. Now, don't get me wrong, I did not get this right all the time. There were many times I had to go to Ryan or Heather and say, I'm really sorry. I blew it. I made a mistake there. And will you forgive me? And it was your mom's fault. There was just a number of things that were just things that needed to be said. Are you still trying to be a nurse to your teen? Now, most of you are going, not really, no, really. Do you wake them up two or three or four times to go to school? You need to go and stand in front of a mirror and just slap yourself. Okay? Your kids are your fault. You need to coach them. And you go, you coach them, what do you mean? Here's how an alarm works, honey. I want you to set it because I'm not going to wake you up anymore. I remember the day I had this conversation again with my son and said, I'm done with that. You're on your own. Sleep as long as you want, whatever. And I know some of you right now are going, oh, but they'll be late. I know. Ryan got up the very next day. He's like, oh, no, nobody woke me up. And I shut my alarm off. And why didn't you wake me up? You could have warned me. I said, I warned you yesterday. There's a new world order here at the kingdom. And he goes, but I'm going to be late. I said, yeah, I know. I can't wait to hear how that goes. It's amazingly free. Oh, it's so freeing. It's like, yeah, bye-bye. Have a great day. And it just lowers the stress levels for you and helps them to grow up. You've got to give them the opportunity to fail if they're ever going to succeed. That's essential. 1 Thessalonians 2. And you know that we treated each of you as a father treats his own children. We pleaded with you, encouraged you, and urged you to live your lives in a way that God would consider worthy. For he called you to share in his kingdom and glory. That's really what a coach does. We are urging, encouraging. What? That we would grow up to live lives that are worthy. That our kids would grow up to be adults. Productive. Following God. That's what coaches do. And I see families do this all the time around here. I really do. You're doing a great job. I see families getting together and taking their kids with them as they go build homes for people that are homeless in Baja. I see families getting together and feeding people in our own city that are in need, doing it as a family. I see them as a family doing these backpack projects, providing for kids that otherwise would not have what they need. I see them actually go on mission trips and take their kids with them to Uganda to visit Bright Hope Orphanage. Our kids are learning that it's normal to think beyond themselves. Helps them to grow up. It's part of the coaching. And it also leads into that final stage, which is the goal, which is friend. The friend role is the one where we're peers, where we're building into each other. There's a mutual give and take, and it's wonderful. And I don't know, there's an age frame. The parameters are fuzzy. And different cultures have different kind of passing of the torch sort of things that they do. You look at different cultures around the world throughout history, and you'll see that, and often they refer to the male in the tribe, and it'll be, they go on a trek, they go on a hunt at this certain age, and it's kind of their first step into manhood. These things. In our culture, that that age seems to be quite a bit later than most other cultures in our world and in history, because we don't bring together those responsibilities and consequences. And so they feel entitled, and so they grow up later than most cultures do. And it's not good. We need to find those things. You know, how do we? Okay, it's, you know, you're becoming a man. I remember when Ryan turned 16, I grabbed two of my lifelong friends who had watched Ryan grow up, and we went on a trek. And about halfway there, we stopped at a beautiful lake in this wilderness setting, and I pulled out four really good cigars, and we smoked a cigar together. Man day. Then we finished our trek to the Tom Petty concert. Now, that's living, you know? God bless America. And if you're some, you're going, I can't believe the pastor did that. That's what my wife said, too, when I got home. But and that might not be your thing. That certainly wasn't the only thing. I got to participate in a really great one last month when Kevin and Patrice McPeak asked us to host the graduation party for their son, Sam. And during that celebration, there were key adults in his life who stood up and talked about the character that they had seen develop in Sam. And they talked about the kind of person he had become. And then others laid hands on, and a few people prayed prayers over Sam. It was a wonderful coming of age, entering into manhood kind of thing. If you want to have the lifelong friendship with your kids, you must honor these phases. You've got to become acquainted with this developmental process. I and my wife Carmen are so blessed that four of our very best friends are Ryan and his wife Michelle, and Heather and her husband Jason. You know, they are great, great friends to us. And they build into our lives. And it's mutual. But for some of you, this whole topic is even a little bit painful, maybe a lot painful, because you didn't have that parenting that you should have. Or the parenting you did have really left a lot of hurt in your heart. Psalms 68:5. Father to the fatherless, defender of widows, this is God, whose dwelling is holy. My dad was absentee alcoholic, died when I was 9. My mom worked all the time because she had to. And so I didn't have any example of this. And maybe, you know, you'd say you're in a similar place. Well, I would ask you this. Have you allowed God to parent you? Because he will. I experienced that myself. I got to discover God as a nurse caring for me. And I got to understand that he's the ultimate authority and he gets the final say in my life. And then I would pray about things sometimes, say, Lord, should I go this direction or this direction? And I'd almost have a sense of him saying, you choose. And I got to experience him as a coach. And now I am learning to enjoy a friendship with God. See, he can take you through what your parents didn't pull off. And I'm grateful that I had a church that helped me, that taught things like this today, and that had opportunities to build relationships with people who could mentor and coach along the way. I'm also grateful for my kids' sake, because that cycle of dysfunction that I grew up in was broken. And they got to experience the dysfunction that I could uniquely bring all on my own. Regardless of the wreckage in the rearview mirror of your family, you can do something about it. Regardless of where you are in this stage. Regardless of what that might look like. As awkward a family photo as yours might be, you can Photoshop that puppy. You can make some changes. You can teach your kids to be responsible, to be productive, and to build a great friendship. And one of the great places to start is help them to live beyond themselves. You know, for the last few weeks, we've been talking about this opportunity to sponsor orphans at Bright Hope. $30 a month pays for their clothing, it pays for their housing, pays for their food, pays for their medical care, pays for their education. $30. And we've had hundreds of you already do that. I'm grateful. I'm hoping this weekend, it's the last weekend, that we will have another 100 orphans sponsored before we're done. I want to ask you to do more than just decide to do that, which I hope you will. But then take that to a family meeting and say, here's what we're doing. And encourage the kids to participate. Maybe give them an extra job where they could earn a couple bucks that they would contribute toward that. And you'll get monthly updates on what's happening with it. Include your kids in that. It's such a great step. Maybe for you, you know, lead by example. Say, okay, I'm going to skip a latte a week. And I'll put that. It doesn't take much. Everybody doing a little something for $30 a month. I encourage you to take that kind of step.